Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. New polls show Newt Gingrich leapfrogging over former frontrunner Mitt Romney in Florida. The new Rasmussen poll shows Gingrich with 41% of the vote, Romney now second at 32%. Pretty amazing considering Newt Gingrich only opened an office in Florida 2 weeks ago. Rick Santorum is third with 11%. Texas Congressman Ron Paul, who's not campaigning in the state, has 8%. Former Governor Jeb Bush has called on the Republican candidates to watch their tone with issues like immigration, what with the large Cuban population in Florida. But Mitt Romney seems to have already switched his attacks to those against Gingrich. Today in Tampa, he called on Newt Gingrich to release more information about possible lobbying efforts. Let's bring in Mark Caputo, Miami Herald reporter. And Mark, it sounds like Romney's deep organization in Florida against Gingrich's momentum. Your thoughts on those polls?
Well, it shows it's a volatile election year. Mitt Romney was winning by something like 22 points a few weeks ago. Now he's losing by 9. Certainly expect those poll numbers to change. It's going to tighten up. Mitt Romney, despite having said at the last debate that he wished he could have spent more time attacking President Obama than criticizing his Republican opponents, has now started to criticize his Republican opponent, Newt Gingrich, far more, and by name, and through his own mouth. And he's putting his money where his mouth is. He's running an ad, a television ad, that attempts to tie Newt Gingrich to the housing crisis, because Newt Gingrich had been a consultant for Freddie Mac, had a $1.7 million consulting fee. It's in one point he was an historian. Romney is laughing at this and making that an object of derision in his ad, and I think it's going to move some numbers. We're a hard-hit state for the mortgage crisis, for the home foreclosure crisis.
Well, as you say, Mitt Romney accusing Newt Gingrich of lobbying for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It would be illegal if he didn't register as a lobbyist. He claims that he didn't. And today, Mitt Romney accusing Newt Gingrich of lobbying for drug companies in shaping the Medicare prescription drug benefit. In other words, inappropriately working with former colleagues when Newt Gingrich was out of Congress to advance the causes of drug companies he might have been representing, and now Mitt Romney's asking for his client list. Is he potentially on dangerous turf here, Mark, because, you know, many people in Florida benefit from that Medicare prescription drug benefit? They may not think it's such a bad thing that Newt Gingrich lobbied for it.
Yeah, that's a good question. However, what Romney is doing, campaigns are about narratives. They're stories. You tell a story about yourself, and if need be, you tell a story about your opponent. So the story he wants to tell, the narrative that Mitt Romney wants to tell about Newt Gingrich, is that this guy is slippery, he's an insider, he's a, quote, influence peddler, he's a lobbyist. So that's more of what that's about. It's to reinforce the larger point that you can't trust him. It's not necessarily to say that the prescription drug benefit was bad, albeit some conservatives at the time had a problem with it. But, you know, this is Florida. I can't remember the number of people on Medicare in Florida, but suffice to say, it's something like on the order of $12 billion in benefit that comes here about every year.
What about Newt Gingrich's marital issues? Now, this weekend, analysts were attributing his huge win in South Carolina to his brush back of the CNN moderator's question about marriage. They said it showed voters don't care about that issue. But it could have just shown that this was a partisan audience in South Carolina. Today, we're hearing Republicans like Representative Jason Chaffetz from Utah saying, we were angry at Clinton and Edwards when they fooled around. It shouldn't be okay when a Republican does it. What are you hearing in Florida?
Well, I kind of reject the analysis that people in South Carolina, where I spent a little time, were really tuned in on these particulars. For those whom it didn't matter, it didn't matter. They were Newt Gingrich supporters. And for those whom it mattered, it mattered. They're Mitt Romney supporters and Gingrich opponents. Really, what South Carolina voters liked about Newt Gingrich, and what Florida voters will probably like about Newt Gingrich, and perhaps like about Mitt Romney now that he's on the attack, Newt Gingrich came across as tough. He came across as a fighter. And Mitt Romney didn't. A lot of Republicans think Barack Obama's all talk. They'd love to see someone eviscerate him. They think that guy, at least in South Carolina, is Newt Gingrich. We'll see if Mitt Romney is able to take that mantle from him in Florida.
Boy, Mark Caputo, that sounds to me like tonight's debate in Tampa.
They matter. They matter so much that Mitt Romney's top advisor, Stuart Stevens, at one point after the last debate, said maybe we won't have the Monday debate in Tampa. They saw what was happening in the polls. They realized that every time Mitt Romney gets on stage with Newt Gingrich, Newt Gingrich has been outshining him, at least as of late. So they certainly matter. Now, there's also an expectations game. People expect Newt to do well each time and Mitt Romney to do less well. So that probably can play in Romney's favor.
Well, at the very least, it sounds like there's going to be metaphorical blood on the floor.
indeed. Yeah. It is Florida, and we like our share of blood in primary seasons. Republican primaries in Florida are always vicious affairs. Sometimes they're more vicious than the actual general election.
Miami Herald reporter Mark Caputo. Mark, thanks as always.
Thank you much.
More and more cash-strapped states are considering expanding gambling beyond their state lotteries to fill budget shortfalls. That means more casinos may be coming your way. There are some being considered here in Massachusetts. But also internet gambling. We want to take a look there today. Last month, the Department of Justice reversed its stance and declared that online gambling is okay as long as it's approved by the state it's in. So does that mean online poker games will soon be going full tilt again? They'd all but disappeared in the U.S. after some high-profile indictments one day last April, a day called Black Friday by the poker community. Will states be running this online gambling, or will they be an overarching federal law? I, Nelson Rose, is an expert on gambling law and a legal consultant to both governments and the gambling industry. He's a professor at Whittier Law School in Encino, California. Nelson, welcome.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And first, start with this Department of Justice ruling. I think we need to back up here. New York and Illinois had asked whether a law from 1961 had prevented them from selling lottery tickets online. But there had also been some high-profile, as we said, indictments against some poker sites. Lay the ground before the Justice Department decision. Where were we in online gambling?
Well, it really starts with 1961, with Bobby Kennedy's war on organized crime. He got the Wire Act passed, and it was designed to cut the wire. What the wire was a telegraph wire that illegal bookies used so that they could get the results of horse races before the bettors. If you ever saw the movie The Sting, you know you don't want the bettors to know the results of the horse races before the bookie. So the Wire Act was designed to go after telegraph wires and horse racing. It's the major federal statute that the Department of Justice has been using to intimidate and scare off internet gambling.
So New York and Illinois had asked the Department of Justice whether that Wire Act of 1961 stopped them from selling lottery tickets online. But meanwhile, we also had online poker sites. These were sites like Absolute Poker Stars and Full Tilt Poker. And do I understand that the Justice Department said that financial institutions couldn't collect and transfer these transactions? This is across state lines. So that, in effect, shut them down?
Well, what happened is it's a wonderful irony that the explosion of internet gambling that is about to sweep the country was created by conservative Republicans trying to outlaw internet gambling. When Bill Frist was the majority leader of the Senate, he rammed through the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act by attaching it to an anti-terrorist bill. That statute made it a crime for a company that is involved in illegal gambling to accept money for illegal internet gambling. But it was rushed through so fast that it's got these exemptions, including it expressly says intrastate gambling is okay. So we now have a conflict. We've got one federal statute, the Wire Act, that is being interpreted as saying intrastate gambling is not legal if a wire happens to cross into another state. And you have another act of Congress that says expressly intrastate gambling is legal, and we don't care if a wire crosses into another state. So the Department of Justice was faced with a problem, and they're also faced with a problem, which is we've got, in fact, right now there are 8 state lotteries that are selling lottery ticket subscriptions online. We have more than half the states doing interstate horse race betting using the internet and telephones. So something had to be done. My theory is that the announcement by the Department of Justice came 2 days before Christmas. I think that was on purpose. Number one, it's a very, very slow news day. Nobody really caught on to what, in fact, is a fairly major decision about legal gambling. Number two, in fact, it's a Christmas present. Barack Obama gave the states the opportunity to make hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, create thousands of jobs. So what this decision says is the Department of Justice has backed off from its two fairly extreme positions. The Wire Act doesn't cover all forms of gambling. It only covers sports betting. And we don't particularly care anymore if a wire happens to cross into another state.
Well, let me hold you up there. The Justice Department ruling didn't just say all online gambling could happen. Won't it still ban sports betting online?
Well, sports betting is about the only form that is now still have some restrictions under federal law. There are other court cases being filed to challenge what few restrictions exist even on sports betting. We've got 8 states that are selling lottery tickets online right now. They're going to immediately start selling individual tickets, even if the payment processor happens to be in another state. The big question, in fact, will be, are they going to do instant lotteries? Are they going to do scratchers? Because you put a scratch-off ticket on a video screen, and it's a lot like a slot machine. So we've got 8 states that will instantly be doing it. There's another 38 states that have state lotteries. They're all looking to do this.
So as you say, the immediate result of the justice decision is that states are selling lottery tickets online, and they may even refine that more, and more states may be doing it. But what about online gambling?
Well, the first actors will be the state lotteries because they can move fast. If their state statutes allow them, they're going to immediately be doing internet gambling. We already got interstate horse racing. We also have interstate sports betting in Nevada, and both Nevada and the District of Columbia have legalized internet poker. And in fact, in Washington, D.C., they've legalized internet blackjack. Those are not yet up and operating, in part because they were afraid of the Wire Act. Now they know it's okay. So Nevada, in particular, will be setting up intrastate internet poker within a couple months. I expect we are going to see a lot of other states jump on. In fact, the next state, interestingly, will be Iowa. They have been studying this for 3 years. I think Iowa will be legalizing internet poker before April. California is absolutely desperate for money. New Jersey will legalize all forms of internet casinos and even sports betting in a fight in the courts on whether they can do the sports betting. But they'll definitely have internet casinos before the end of the year. And then every other state is desperate for money, and gambling is seen as a painless tax, so they're all going to jump on the bandwagon also.
Well, we're talking about online gambling because the Justice Department has cleared the way for states to consider it. Nelson Rose is a professor at Whittier Law School. He's also a consultant to states and the gambling industry. And some of you are weighing in as well. Rich Mooney of the Poker Players Alliance says his group has more than 1 million members. Agrim Pathak says few online players are problem players. But Eric Fox says we need licensing and regulation to create a safe environment to prevent underage gambling, for instance. And he feels this will be handled much better at the federal level than statewide. You can weigh in as well. HereAndNow.org will pick up in 1 minute. Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Whittier Law School professor I. Nelson Rose. He's an expert on gambling law and a legal consultant to both governments and the gambling industry. He predicts an explosion of online poker, lottery ticket sales, and internet casinos as states start to capitalize on last month's Justice Department decision declaring online gambling legal. And Nelson, you were just saying you think Iowa will be one of the first states to move into this. But as you just mentioned, that state released a study that found that legalizing online poker might net between $3 million and $13 million a year. That's far less than the private companies had estimated. California may net maybe $200 million a year. Again, a drop in the bucket of their budget problems. And aren't there questions about what costs the states might incur, say, addiction?
Yeah, there definitely is a downside to expanding legal gambling and making it easily available. But the upside for the states, which are absolutely desperate for money right now, they can't raise taxes anymore, they can't cut services anymore, and they can't have deficits by their state constitutions. So, yeah, when you're facing a $10 or $20 billion deficit like California, it looks like $250 million isn't going to do much, but it is $250 million they don't have now. And to understand the politics, the politicians are legalizing internet gambling solely to raise money. This is not to protect local industry. Caesars Entertainment isn't here in California, but the state's going to want somebody like them to come in and give them $100 million plus 20% of the gross gaming revenue. There's a big political fight because the local operators, the card clubs and the Indian tribes, they want the license. Now, when the two coincide, like in New Jersey, where the big money are the local operators, we know New Jersey is going to legalize internet casinos. The licenses will be to the Atlantic City casinos.
That's as opposed to just playing online poker. So help us with that, because we understand some states are just focusing on poker because they want it to be a game of some sort of skill. You know, we mentioned the addiction. Well, if you're just sort of rolling, oranges and lemons, it's a game of luck, and then you're back into lottery land. And some states want to make sure that if they do online gambling, it's a game of skill.
It all depends on the local politics. In New Jersey, the Atlantic City casinos don't see much problem with legalizing internet casinos as long as they're the ones who operate it. In Nevada, they do not have internet casinos. They only have internet poker and sports betting because they don't want people to stay at home. They want people to go to the casinos. But in 44 of the states, I think we will start with mostly poker and, of course, the state lotteries, and we've already got horse racing. And then it's going to expand. Blackjack and craps and slot machines will be coming because, in fact, legal gambling makes money, it creates jobs, and the downside, the social impact, is more hidden. The compulsive gamblers don't have alcohol on their breath. So, and children gambling, it's very hard to detect to see if there really is a lot of them. I have to say the internet gambling industry is actually fairly good at protecting minors and protecting compulsive gamblers from themselves. But bringing gambling into the home is dangerous, and there will be a downside for society.
Yeah, we can't get grandma out of the back room. We can't get dad to, go to work. Those different things that we've heard. But you say online gambling creates jobs. That's counterintuitive, because you would think that if something's happening on the computer as opposed to having to hire 400 people to run a casino, online gambling would actually eliminate or not create as many jobs as a brick and mortar would.
First, by the way, in response to your comments about grandma, the elderly tend to be the ones who most want legal gambling, particularly internet, which makes it easy for them to do it. But in terms of jobs, you're right. Internet gambling can't create the number of jobs that land-based creates. A land-based casino is very labor-intensive. It has thousands of employees. Any internet service doesn't have that number of employees. It will, however, create jobs. And the states can require that those jobs be in their state.
Well, and staying along the same line, we are going to talk to you down the road about casinos, the brick-and-mortar gambling. And we know how huge international gambling is with huge casinos now in Macau, for instance. But now that online gambling has been sort of cleared here in the U.S. by this justice ruling, doesn't this mean that these already established casinos in, let's say, Macau could start their internet online gambling and get the U.S. market?
They won't necessarily get the U.S. market. You're not going to get a whole lot of people in the United States who are going to log on to the Hong Kong Jockey Club to go bet on soccer. And you're not going to be going on to a Chinese language site unless you speak Chinese.
One last quick question, Nelson Rose. With each state having its own unique approach to online gambling, do you think this will be completely left up to the states to regulate, or will there be an overarching federal law?
I'm in somewhat of a dispute with some of the people who want a federal law because I don't think a federal law is going to happen. The big players here, like Caesars Entertainment, of course, does not want to compete in 50 states against 50 local politically powerful gambling operators for getting one of the very few licenses that will be issued. So we're not going to see anything coming through Congress, at least for a couple years. And by that time, the states will be up and operating. It took 45 years to go from zero state lotteries in this country to now almost every state has a state lottery. It's not going to take four decades for internet gambling to spread across the United States.
Interesting to see what will happen as a result of all of this. I, Nelson Rose, a professor at Whittier Law School in Encino, California, an expert on gambling law. He also writes the blog Gambling and the Law. Nelson, thanks so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And again, you can weigh in on this at hereandnow.org. And while there, what do you want to hear from President Obama in tomorrow's State of the Union address? We're going to hear from voters across the country, but let us hear from you now at hereandnow.org. Still ahead today, how the National Weather Service is upgrading its radar. Latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, and by the Harvard Art Museums, from Chinese jades to Jasper Johns, Byzantium to Bernini. Learn more at harvardartmuseums.org. And by the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, with Isaac Julian's 10,000 Waves, a 9-screen video installation featuring Maggie Chung, icaboston.org.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now.
I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day. I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away.
Billionaire investor Warren Buffett strumming his ukulele, sitting in front of his huge model train set, helping China usher in the Lunar New Year today on a video shown during China Central TV's annual New Year's gala. Why, you ask? Well, more than a billion Chinese travel during the New Year period, many by train, and Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway, owns the railroad operator, Burlington Northern Santa Fe. So there you go. This is the year of the dragon. It's considered to be especially lucky compared to, say, the year of the rat, which is why Asia is bracing for a boom in dragon babies. The BBC's Hong Kong correspondent Juliana Liu reports.
The Holiday Fair near Victoria Park. There's a real carnival atmosphere here, especially since this is the Year of the Dragon, the most eagerly awaited sign in the Chinese zodiac. Dragon toys and puppets are everywhere. It's a special time for Ivy Ma, a housewife, and her businessman husband Jimmy. Much to their excitement and after careful planning, their first son should arrive in 2 weeks.
Ivy, let me start with you. Why was it so important for you to have a dragon baby?
For Hong Kong people, well, in our hearts, we believe that dragons are lucky. That's why I want a dragon baby.
In Chinese society, out of all the signs in the zodiac, the dragon is the most important. And I think they are smarter and luckier.
So what special preparations did you guys undertake to make sure that you would have a dragon baby?
A year ago, I went to a traditional doctor for a special checkup to make sure the baby and I would be healthy.
Well, I went to see the traditional Chinese doctor too. I also tried to smoke less and exercise more.
Good morning, Premier Medical Center. Isa speaking. Can I help you?
So many couples want dragon babies that it's put a particular strain on Hong Kong's medical system. Michelle Choi is an experienced obstetrician who's feeling the pressure.
Yes, we have been actually quite stressed with all the booking requests for private beds in the hospitals because there are many people who would like to deliver babies in the year of the dragon. And on top of that, we've got a lot of mainland mothers who want to deliver in Hong Kong too.
So all in all, I mean, would you suggest to your patients if they can avoid it to avoid giving birth in the year of the dragon because it seems like such a hassle?
You can't really avoid giving birth in a particular year. It's a very long time. And even if we are not in the year of the dragon, we are already pretty stressed. It's just this is year of the dragon causes about 10% increase in birth rate.
And it's not just the hospitals that are being overwhelmed. The education system, too, is unprepared to deal with the consequences of a dragon boom in a few years' time, says S.K. Jie, a professor at Hong Kong University.
Our schools can't deal with it if the birth rate increases. There won't be room in preschools or primary schools, and there will be more students for every teacher.
So a child may actually be worse off being born in the year of the dragon.
Yes, dragon babies may not receive the same quality of education as children born in other years.
This is three-year-old Ashley. She's a rat in the Chinese calendar. Her mum, Catherine Mock, a thoroughly modern woman, is pregnant again. She postponed her second pregnancy for more than a year to make sure that this time she would have a baby who commands instant respect from family and friends.
Other sign, like probably rat or pig.
Or dog.
It's just a small joke. It's no big deal. But still, people will make joke about it.
That idea, that dragons are somehow special, seems ingrained in Chinese culture. It explains why, despite the obstacles they'll face, dragon babies are likely to be treated as the leaders of the future.
That report from the BBC's Juliana Liu. And we'll be back in 30 seconds with a report from Alabama as storms pound the region in the Midwest, here and now. In Alabama today, officials were supposed to release a report on the state's response to those deadly storms that raked the state last April, killing more than 240 people. But Alabama is cleaning up again after severe weather that killed at least two people in Birmingham early this morning. The meeting about the spring storms had to be canceled. These new storms were part of a system that stretched from the Great Lakes down to the Gulf of Mexico, pounding the South and the Midwest, injuring at least 100 people, knocking out power for thousands. It was forecast, and in a minute we're going to look at new radar that the Weather Service is implementing. But first, let's check in with Mark Kelly, Public Information Officer for Jefferson County Emergency Management Agency. He's been sitting at their operations center in Birmingham, Alabama, taking calls from his field team. Mark, what are they seeing?
Well, as you mentioned, we have two confirmed fatalities at this point, approximately 100 injuries that we're aware of that have been treated in the field. Some of those people have been transported to local hospitals. The search and rescue operations continue, particularly in the Center Point area, which was hardest hit.
Well, we're looking at a photograph on Twitter of a Wells Fargo office building in Center Point. It's partly collapsed, but the parking lot's been torn away, streetlights just dangling there. We were watching news reports this morning. It seemed as if you had a lot of warning.
There was warning. The National Weather Service, as early as yesterday evening, had warned us of the potential for severe storms and possible tornadoes.
Well, of course, Birmingham was one of the areas it hit last April. You remember this well, when another line of storms came through. You know, many people killed at that time. There's got to be some jittery nerves.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, at that time, our fatalities here in Jefferson County were 20 from the April 27th storm. And we really considered that at the time and still to be a relatively low number given the severity of the storms. Two fatalities reported here so far. We think that certainly that has something to do with the effectiveness of the warnings, but also with the responsiveness of people to the warnings.
Sure, especially after April, you're not going to hesitate this
exactly
time around.
Correct.
Mark Kelly, Public Information Officer for Jefferson County Emergency Management Agency. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
And those tornadoes that hit Alabama last April helped make 2011 one of the deadliest and costliest for severe weather in U.S. history, with more than 600 people killed, more than $50 billion in damage. And now the National Weather Service is in the midst of a project to install a new radar system in all of its 160 forecast offices across the country. Doyle Rice is weather editor and reporter for USA Today. In fact, we're reaching you, Doyle, in New Orleans, where you're attending a weather conference. So thanks for taking a break. And tell us more about this new radar. How is it better than what we have?
Yeah, what the Weather Service has just started installing about, I think they've got 20 out of 160 installed so far. And these are, without getting too technical, are what they're calling dual polarization radars. Basically, instead of the radar beam going out only horizontally and kind of taking a slice of the atmosphere with a horizontal beam, this one will be both horizontal and vertical. So it'll give, instead of a one-dimensional picture of what's coming out there, it'll give a two-dimensional picture, which then forecasters can look at and better identify all sorts of precipitation types as well as signatures of tornadoes.
Is this just something forecasters can look at, or can we see it too? Because this morning at like 5 a.m., I was watching those dark red spots, you know, move across the maps as people in Alabama were getting the warning that that dark red, that violent weather was coming. Is this something we'll see too?
Yeah, almost all the radars that folks see on their TVs, internet, mobile devices, it originates from National Weather Service radar, and then the commercial weather forecasting agencies such as AccuWeather or the Weather Channel or Weather Underground then kind of put their own colors and their own signature on it, so their customers can get a better idea of what it's looking at. But I believe once this new radar is installed across the country, then it'll take some time before you'll notice a difference on your on the radar that you're looking at. But the commercial vendors will take that data and probably present it in a way that you'll see a difference.
Okay. Well, what about warning once you've, you know, seen this? Now, you know, if you're not up watching television or listening to the radio and seeing that red splotch go across the screen, you know, we know so many towns don't have sirens. What about improving notification?
Well, I know that the Weather Service is working hard on what they're calling more of a trying to get a weather-ready nation is what their phrase is for it. And it's all about improving warnings, improving broadcasts, improving forecasts. You know, I think one thing that they're working on, and it hopefully will be coming eventually, is better able to transmit it to the mobile devices that everybody's carrying, whether it's your iPhone or your iPad, whatever. They're working on ways so that you'll get a better warning specific to your location using those devices.
Yeah. And you think that towns could use things like cell phones to just call you, know, alert systems like that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of what they're still relying on the Weather Service is technology which isn't quite as modern. As it's kind of everything has gone so fast in the last few years that in order to disseminate the forecast, they're still using technology that might have been up to date a few years ago, but it's not quite there yet. But yeah. I know they're working on it.
And this new radar system, we know it's started already. Will it be finished by the spring when the severe weather does come?
No, actually, it won't be until 2013. Apparently, it's each when they install the new radar, they have to take offline the current radar for about 2 weeks. And then cover it with radars from around the area. So it can't all be done at once by any stretch, because then we wouldn't have any radar across the country. So it has to be done at a staggered, specific schedule that they've set up. And just the one in Birmingham last night has not had the new radar installed yet. I don't know how it might have changed the forecast, because they certainly did a good job last night. But the Birmingham radar will be updated in February.
People will look forward to that. Doyle Rice, weather editor and reporter for USA Today, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Okay, we're coming up on a break. We're going to leave you with this note, or rather a couple of them. Steven Tyler, he sang the national anthem before yesterday's Pats-Giants game. Pats won, but did Tyler? There have been a lot of critics. Just let you listen. You know, what do you think?
What so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight.
I thought he had passion.
Oh,
back in a minute, here and now.
We're so gallantly streaming, and the Rockies
welcome back.
I wanna Sunday kind of love, a love to last past Saturday night.
It has. Love for Etta James, who died on Friday at the age of 73 from complications of leukemia, has been pouring out all weekend long. The Grammy-winning R&B artist also battled addictions, weight and kidney problems, dementia. But that voice, Beyoncé, who played Etta in the 2008 film Cadillac Records, called her one of the greatest vocalists of all time. Kelly Clarkson covered her hit I'd Rather Go Blind in concert Friday night. On our Facebook page, Mike posted a clip of Etta James singing that song in 1987. He says it's his favorite Etta James moment. And pop culture critic Renee Graham had some thoughts of her own.
This was a really extraordinary woman. Her career began in the mid-50s and really continued well into the 21st century, up until the time when she began to have a lot of very serious health issues with dementia and leukemia. You know, people know Etta James for At Last, but she was so much more than that one song. Although it is worth mentioning that, you know, if you listen to that song, it's been played at weddings, it's been played at all kinds of events. She made that song when she was 21 years old. That is not the voice of a 21-year-old.
Let's listen.
At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over.
We remind ourselves she was born Jamesetta Hawkins.
Jamesetta Hawkins. So her name, Etta James, was actually just sort of transposing her first name, which was Jamesetta. She made her stage name Etta James.
Yeah, and born in 1938, a gospel prodigy. Do you remember when you first heard her?
Oh, I first heard her, I think I was probably 6 or 7 years old. My parents were big fans, and they had, I sort of got my hands on their single of her song, Tell Mama.
You thought you hadn't found a good girl.
Even at 6 or 7 years old, I kind of knew that wasn't the mother speaking to her son. Wasn't sure what she was singing about necessarily, but it felt like adult things. And that was always the thing about Etta James. There was always this drama and tension in the songs that she sang. And it was just, it really appealed to me.
And,
do we know what happened? Because she went from gospel prodigy to, as you say, sort of old before her time, and then struggled with a heroin addiction.
Well, you know, she always had a difficult time in life. When she was born in Los Angeles, and you know, never really knew her father, and her mother had a series of boyfriends, and some of those men were quite abusive. So she already had that as part of her life as a child. She started off singing in churches, and then her mother moved with her to San Francisco, and she started to hear doo-wop, 1950s doo-wop. And that really changed the direction of things for her. The gospel shouter quality she had, she never really lost, but she wanted to do R&B. Hmm. And so when she was a teenager, she formed a group called the Creolettes, and she was discovered by R&B singer and producer Johnny Otis. And he helped them produce and put out their first song, which was called Roll With Me Henry, which we'll hear.
You got to roll with me, Henry.
All right, baby.
Roll with me, Henry.
Roll me, maybe.
Roll with me, Henry.
Any old time.
Roll with me, Henry.
Won't change my mind.
Roll with me, Henry.
All right.
You better roll it while the rolling is on.
Later in Etta James' life, she won a bunch of Grammys, one for her tribute album to Billie Holiday. We'll hear a little of that as well.
I'm afraid the masquerade is over, over. And so is love, and so is love.
Renee Graham, we know Etta James went in and out of the news, but came back in when Beyonce was chosen to sing at last at one of the inaugural balls. You know, you got to think, why wasn't Etta James up there?
Well, the belief now is that she was early in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease and wasn't really able to do that. However, she was enough in her right mind to be quite critical of Beyonce singing what was essentially Etta James' signature song. And, you know, just days after Beyonce sang the song at the inaugural ball, Etta James, you know, expressed her displeasure, shall we say, with Beyonce doing this. And after a bit of a brouhaha, she kind of backed off and said that she was actually kidding about that Beyonce beatdown. But I totally understood where she was coming from. No one should sing that song but Etta James, although it's been covered by everyone from Celine Dion to Cyndi Lauper to Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, you smile, oh, and then the spell was cast. And here we are in heaven. For you are mine at last.
Well, Etta James is gone. That song, her singing it, you know, remains. But you talk about this beatdown with Beyonce. Do they all know who she is? Was she an influence on them?
I think she was a huge influence. You can even go back to 1967 and, you know, listen to Janis Joplin covering Tell Mama.
She didn't have no sister. Was it worth all the time and despair? And it saved many thoughts you were doors. I just heard that man's order you close, hey! Now tell mama for all about it. Tell mama, what do you need? Tell your mama, baby.
Janis Joplin, Christina Aguilera, I would say Mary J. Blige, and certainly Adele. The young woman with the big voice. You know, we don't know at this point that Adele has the issues that Etta James had. But Etta James, you hear it all in that music. There's so much living, which is why she never sounded like a teenager.
I don't want you be no slave. I don't want you to work all day. I don't want you sad and blue. I just want to make love to you.
She didn't look like a teenager. She had this blonde hair. She had these, like, absolutely over-tweezed eyebrows. She had this sort of round, ripe figure. I mean, she looked like Saturday Night, if you know what I mean. You know? And that quality, that brassy, out there quality, you don't really find in singers. Singers are very controlled now, but Etta James put everything into it. There was a song that she had called Stop the Wedding. And it's a typical, you should be marrying me, not her song. But that song shreds you. You feel everything she is singing in that song. It's one of the first Etta James songs I heard, and we'll end with that.
Renee Graham, helping us say goodbye to Etta James. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Robin.
Wait, stop the wedding. You're just marrying her for spite. If she knew the inside story, she'd tell you what you're doing just ain't right. I know you don't wanna hurt me, so stop this madness before it starts. Revenge will only cause you